Welcome to another episode of the Carry Trainer Higher Line Podcast. Welcome to another episode of the Higher Line Podcast. This is actually our 100th episode. It's pretty exciting that you made our 100th episode.
Very nice.
It's my friend Steve Zambello. Did I say it right?
That is correct.
Zambello. Like Zamboni, but bello.
Right.
100% Italian.
100%.
Loves the sausage.
Yeah. True.
So this is going to be an interesting discussion. Steve is a retired fireman, paramedic, nurse, and fire chief at the end of your career with the fire service. And I met you this past year when I was going through the EMT program with our local community college. You help out there passing on your skills and knowledges.
That's correct, yes.
So I wanted to, we talked upstairs before we began, and I just told you kind of some of the topics I wanted to hit. So maybe just talk for a minute about who Steve is.
Sure.
You know, you like long walks on the beach,
sure,
et cetera.
Sure. I don't know where to start, but if you want me to start from the beginning.
Sure. It's why up not? To you. It's always a good
okay.
spot.
Okay, so I'm born and raised in Chicago, Illinois.
Okay.
As you said, from a second generation Italian family, we had a lot of doing and a lot of family in the city of Chicago down on Taylor Street. Little Italy is what they call that.
Mm-hmm.
And my grandparents lived there for some years after my parents migrated up north in Chicago a little bit more. And then, I was born and I was on the northwest side of Chicago and I attended Chicago Public Grade School, and I went to a Catholic high school.
Okay.
From there, I decided that when I graduated high school, I wasn't a very good student. I tried going to a junior college in the city for one semester and found that I dropped three of the five classes. Or fail them. I didn't have a choice. So I realized shortly after, you know what, maybe college isn't for me. And so I'm like, okay, what to do, right? So in the meantime, if I could back up, some of my part-time jobs while I was in high school was working at a hospital as a local dishwasher is what I did.
So that was your first taste of the medical profession?
No, as a dishwasher.
What you're saying, like just being in the environment.
Oh, yeah, as far as the hospital.
Being around
yes.
sick people,
oh, yeah,
watching
absolutely.
Doctors come in
absolutely.
Tired as shit.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
And so then my dad said, well, if you're not going to go to school, you have to get a job or join the service. I went full-time with the food service department at the hospital in the city after I graduated high school. And that seemed to suffice for my father as long as I was doing something. And, of course, I realized shortly that I didn't want to work in that type of a job for the rest of my life. And there's just a few things in there that just made me realize that I'm maybe a little bit better than this and I can try and get out of it. So one day I'm in one of my local drinking establishments. And
choir practice.
Yes, absolutely. And my neighbor that lived on the next block, who his parents were very good friends with my parents, said, "Hey, what are you up to?" And I says, "Well, you know what? I'm working full time at the hospital and in the food service department, and I'm lost. I don't know what to do. I'm 18 and a half, 19 years old. I don't know what to do." And he goes, "What'd you ever think about the fire department?" And I go, "Fire department? No, I gotta say, I've never thought of the fire department before."
So you weren't one of those kids that one day I'm gonna be a cop or I'm gonna
absolutely
be a soldier.
Not.
Okay.
Absolutely not. No, no generation of my family was ever in the fire service before me.
What'd you tell me your dad did?
Steelworker.
And your grandpa?
Steelworker. My grandpa worked for Otis Elevator doing elevator stuff and repairs.
Local
and operation. One. I believe that's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, he said, "You know what?" He goes, "You should give it a try." I go, "Well, I don't know. I don't know. I just never." He goes, "I'll tell you what. Come to the firehouse. I'm working Saturday." And the firehouse he happened to be assigned to was right in our neighborhood. And he goes, "Come and hang out, you know, and be prepared to stay the whole 24 hours. 24 hours. Yeah, I go, "All right." So I did.
Just give you a taste of it.
Exactly. To give me the full taste of what happens over.
This is in the late 70s?
This was, yes. This was 77.
Okay.
You know,
the guys were still smoke eaters, no masks.
Oh, no, yeah.
All cig smokers, right?
That's very true. So I spent the 24 hours, and, of course, I fell in love with the fire department. I went on responses because back in those days they allowed, well, they didn't necessarily allow it. They didn't authorize it, but it was okay. Nobody was really so much, you know, monitoring so closely. And so I went on responses with him, and I fell in love. And so I said, okay, how do I do this? He goes, well, this is what you got to do. You got to, next time they have the application for the entrance exam for the Chicago Fire Department, you got to do that. In the meantime, why don't you go to EMT school? And I said, okay. So I went to EMT school, and as I said before, I wasn't a very good student. And at the ripe age of 19, 19 and a half, I was more interested in, you know, partying and hanging out with my buddies and girls, and, you know, and I wasn't really putting forth the effort I should. So I failed EMT school my first round.
Okay. You didn't tell that to the students at this
time. I have shared that with some students, yes.
Okay.
So anyway, I said, well, let me, and I can't recall, I think I passed the class, but I failed the state by 1 or 2%. So the choice was, you know, retake it or, you know, take the test again, and, you know, or go through the whole program again. And I figured, you know, if I was that weak, maybe I need to go through the program again. So I went through the EMT class a second time.
How long was it then, do you remember?
how long before the first one?
No, how long was that program back then?
Oh, they
what
were
you signing on to?
They were 3 months, three and a half months. Yeah, they were about the same. And I passed successfully the second time because I decided to pay attention.
Apply yourself.
And apply myself, exactly. And so then I became an EMT. And then the Chicago Fire Department was linked with the federal government back in those days. And as an EMT, okay, they had a program called CETA, C-E-T-A. Don't exactly remember what that stands for. But the federal government was sending funds to the city to employ EMTs on the fire department on their EMS units. Okay, so basically my mom found out about that, and I applied, and I got hired as a CETA worker, okay, on the Chicago Fire Department. Basically, my job was driving the ambulance, okay, and, you know, whatever, kind of more grunt work for
guys. Help out where they needed a hand.
Kind of grunt work, you know, but it was cool. You know, it was a step in the door. And I said, you know what, I'm going to do this. I step it up, and I'm going to go to paramedic school. So I went to paramedic school, and I graduated paramedic school in 1978 or 79, and funny thing
that
is
was the year I was born.
Funny thing is the Chicago Fire Department was going on strike in 1980 on Valentine's Day under the watchful eye of the great mayor, may she rest in peace, Mayor Jane Byrne. Okay, and so CETA workers, all right, were not going to be covered during the strike, and they were going to be terminated. All right. Well, I just happened in January, okay, of 1980, I switched over to the Chicago Fire Department. I was no longer employed, no longer being
part of that
federal CETA program. And now I was a sworn-in member of the Chicago Fire Department. And then 30 days later, we went on strike. So I narrowly escaped being terminated, all right? The strike lasted 23 days, okay? And, you know, compromises were made both ways.
So there was no fire service for 3 weeks?
Well, there was limited fire service because we had guys who, what we referred to as scabs, who stayed in, okay, and wouldn't walk out on the line. So that kept them, the service in, you know, that kept the fire department from being nowhere, okay, although they were very limited in their responses because they didn't have the manpower.
Yeah.
We were like at one time 95 or 98% out in the beginning. And then they started hiring people off the streets that were already on the list. And those people that took the job during the strike, we referred to them as job grabbers. All right. And so 23 days went by. We negotiated. We agreed on a contract. Our president of our union was Frank Moon Mascari, great man. And he went to jail for us for a time because of the contract, because of the strike. But that was slowly resolved, too.
They locked him up?
They did lock him up.
Like as if he was somehow obstructing?
Yeah, because he authorized because he was the president of the union and he authorized the strike. And apparently, I guess there was a no strike clause, maybe? I don't know under what made them.
Some kind of like in mob action or something.
I don't know what made them be able to lock him up, but something happened and they locked him up. And
Chicago.
It was Chicago. That's so, and there my career on the fire department started. Okay.
So 30 years you were there, and eventually you made your way up to chief.
35. Yeah. 35 years, yeah.
So when you're a chief in Chicago, like out in the suburbs here, there's one chief for a community, but like the city has lots of chiefs, right?
From the little I know from out here, okay, there are more than one chief on a fire department. There's your lower level battalion chiefs.
Okay. Well, I was meaning like the chief.
Oh, the head chief.
Yeah.
Well, in Chicago, we refer to that person as the commissioner.
The commissioner.
And from the commissioner, you go down to the first deputy fire commissioner, and below that are deputy fire commissioners, all right? And then you have assistant deputy fire commissioners, as you said, the Chicago way.
Yeah.
And then from assistant deputy fire commissioner, you went down to the district chief, deputy district chief, battalion chief. When you get to battalion chief, and keep going down to captain, lieutenant, and so on and so forth. At battalion chief and below, you're represented by the Chicago Firefighters Union. You're in local too.
Okay.
When you get above battalion chief, you're out of the union because that's exempt rank positions, meaning you don't take exams to achieve that next rank. It's just
merit-based.
Merit-based, somebody's clout-based, sure, in Chicago, sure. You know.
Yeah.
So that's what happened. So I was all over the city, predominantly on the north side and northwest side, west side. I did go down to the south side plenty of times. Never on a permanent assignment, but on what we call details, which means the manpower was short down there. Hey, you're up for the next detail, so we need you to go down there. So I would go down there for the day, but predominantly it was up on the northwest side.
Okay. So you went from not being a very good student to really digging being a student because you got a master's in nursing, which that's a hell of a lot of school.
So, yeah. So what happened from there was I got on the fire department. Of course, I thought this is it. You know, I'm good. And I was working, everyone on the fire department, I shouldn't say everybody, but a definite majority of the people that are on the Chicago Fire Department work a second job. Okay. Because you have all this ample time off.
Carpenters, painters.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Tradesmen, exactly. So I was working, and I was only, you know, back in those days, I was making $9 an hour, $8.50 an hour, busting my, you know what, you know, leaving my family to go make some more money. And I was thinking there's got to be a way to make more money, you know, and what else would I be interested in? So the city sent out a thing saying you can achieve an associate degree in applied science in paramedic medicine if you just take X amount of more courses, because as a licensed paramedic, you know, or back then they call them a certified paramedic, you had already X amount of hours given. So it looked like I only had half the hours left to complete for the associate degree in applied science. So I said, I'm going to do that. So I did it. And amazingly, I became a pretty good student. But I was taking a course at a time, plucking away at it. And, you know, I had a family and I'm working full time. And I accomplished that. And unbeknownst to me, as I accomplished my associate in applied science from city colleges, they also sent me a letter saying that, I know what happened. Then I started taking some courses, some prereqs, because I wanted to go to nursing school. And as I was taking these prereqs, one of the city colleges sent me a letter saying, we want to know if you're going to attend graduation. This was long after I already was awarded my associate in applied science.
Okay.
And I'm like, what's this about? So I call them and they say, oh yeah, while you're taking your prereqs for nursing school, you've now achieved enough to earn an associate of arts degree. Nice. And we want to know if you're going to attend graduation. Well, that was all news to me. I didn't know that at all. And I didn't really want to attend graduation, but I did ask them to mail me my diploma in the mail, which they did. And so I had an associate of applied science. I had an associate of arts degree. And I thought, okay, it's an achievement. It's an accomplishment for Steve, because Steve wasn't a very good student.
Yeah.
You know. But then I said to myself, all right, I got to be able to do something more, because this really isn't going to earn me more money on a part-time job. So, again, I pursued the rest of my prerequisites for nursing school, and then I applied to Rush University, which is part of Rush Presbyterian St. Luke's Hospital. And in those days, I entered there in like 1991. And in those days, they had an undergraduate bachelor program. And you had to enter with an associate degree and complete your junior, senior year in nursing there, full time. it was very expensive.
How did you work?
So, well, this is here. There, this is going to be a difficult thing. So it was very expensive to go to school there, all right? So I applied for a scholarship, all right? You had to write, an essay, so to speak, about yourself and blah, blah, blah. And they gave out one, okay? And I was awarded the scholarship.
Cool.
Okay? Which meant I was on a free ride for the last 2 years there, which was saving thousands and thousands of dollars.
Yeah, yeah.
But the trade-off was, when I was done with school, okay, I had to go to work full-time for them. Full-time was the word. And I couldn't do that and stay in the fire department. So I tried to cut a deal for, instead of 2 years full-time, how about 4 years part-time? And they wouldn't accept that, so I had to relinquish the scholarship. But it went to a very nice young lady who was also in my program who really needed it. And it was all good. I was happy. So I finished my last 2 years of nursing school there. You asked me, how did I do that with being on the fire department? Well, it was a juggling act.
Yeah.
Mickey, was a juggling act. I had a guy cover for me at the firehouse. And so what we agreed upon was for all the hours that he would stay for me, you know, so that I could go to school, I owed him, all right, and then I had to pay him back. You know, and that was the agreement. Well, let's just say, without getting into any other
sure.
Stuff, we worked out a deal other than that.
Okay.
Okay. And I wiped my slate clean with what I owed him. And that's how I did it. That's how I went to nursing school. But it was difficult. I mean, you're at the firehouse, got to get off in the morning, go to school for 8 hours, you know, sometimes come back to the firehouse. I mean, it was a juggling act.
Did you end up going to work as a nurse at all?
So I did. So, yeah. So I graduated in undergrad in 93. And I started at a local hospital in the city, working in an emergency department.
This is your time away from the firehouse. You'd go there on your off
days. Yes, this was my off days. But now instead of $8.50 an hour, I was making $25 an hour.
Nice.
Okay, and that was my goal. It was about money for my family.
Yeah.
So I could provide for my children nicer than I already could. It wasn't too bad otherwise, but we were sending them to Catholic schools because back in those days, in the city, the Chicago public schools weren't very good.
Yeah, they suck.
So, well, exactly.
I can say that.
They absolutely did suck, and I didn't want my kids going there. And we were having situations with busing and all this other mm-hmm. stuff without getting into further detail on that, and I didn't like that either. So our other choice was sending them to a private school. We're Catholic, mm-hmm. so we had Catholic schools up by us, and so we sent them to Catholic grade school and high schools, which, you know, is an investment. And you have to have the money to do that. So, thus, I was working to do that.
So, you'd go work the full 24-hour shift, and then you'd go work at in the emergency room. That had to make you a much better paramedic, having all of this clinical time, seeing people in there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Although, I want to make sure that everyone understands that being a paramedic and being our nurse are closely related, but not. What do I mean by that? Well, there's a lot of psychomotor type skills and knowledge base that a nurse has that a paramedic doesn't have, and vice versa. Mm-hmm. Okay, as a paramedic, we could do certain things that nurses aren't trained to do, and as a nurse, they do certain things that a paramedic's not trained to do. So I did have to learn in nursing school how to do that, and it wasn't that difficult when I started my orientation in the emergency department as a new graduate nurse, because mm-hmm. it was my first job, and they were very nice to me, and they. I did come with a lot of skills and knowledge, so it wasn't that difficult. But there was some challenging times, and I overcame them, and then I was a full fledged RN in the emergency department, and I did that for some years, and then I decided to move on. What I liked about nursing, aside from the ability to advance my knowledge, okay, and the ability to make a nicer income, and the ability to help people, okay, was that nursing is very autonomous, okay? And not to insult anyone's intelligence, but what I mean by that is we can do lots of things in nursing without having to go back to school, okay? So I was an emergency department nurse, right? Then I decided, you know what? I'm done with this. I want to do something else. So I became a home health nurse, okay? I became a telephone triage nurse, all right? I did lots of things in nursing.
With
that one degree, yes. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of things you could do. You can move into so many different focuses in nursing that you really, it always stays fresh to you because you don't get that burned out. When you start feeling that little bit of burnout, like this is getting really monotonous and stuff, you can move on to another focus if you want. And mm-hmm. I like that in nursing.
I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's not like a completely different field.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. And it's not like you have to go back and get all these more schooling and stuff to do that. You know. So that's what I did. And I was continuing to work as a nurse. I was on the fire department. I was taking my promotion exams on the fire department to get promoted up. I was ready to retire. Well, before I was ready to retire, I was teaching. So for a short stint, 2 years, I want to say 1990 and 91 maybe, I was asked to come down to the Chicago Fire Academy and teach as an instructor in the EMS division. So I chose to do that for 2 years. And that kind of helped me out because...
91 or 2001?
No, excuse me. Let's see. 99 and 2000. Sorry. I was in the...
So like 10 years after nursing school.
Yes, yes. Okay. I went down there for a couple of years and...
Were you teaching, sorry?
I was in the EMS division training paramedics, okay, and firefighter EMTs. And whether there were new candidates coming into our fire academy or our already seasoned veterans that were coming for classes down there. Mm-hmm. I think that was a turning point for me because by making that move, I got discovered, I think, okay, by people, like bigger people on the fire department, mm-hmm. bigger people in the medical field, okay, that maybe realized who I was and they liked me and they think I had the ability to do bigger things. So from there, okay, I took a job. I got asked to teach in city colleges.
Okay.
And training the EMR, EMTs, and the paramedics,
mm-hmm.
okay, for the city colleges. And then, almost simultaneously, I got approached by a major university in Chicago that asked me if I wanted to be a EMS coordinator, okay? So...
Were you doing all of this while you still had the firefighting job?
Yes. Okay. I was on the fire department, you know, and I don't remember the timeline exactly. I wasn't doing it all at the same time, but some of the things, like I was teaching at the city colleges, and I was an EMS coordinator at the same time.
Okay.
And so I really believe that, you know, because of being discovered and of course, working hard at my goals and getting the achievements that I did.
That usually helps.
That brought me up to, you know, the status of and some of these people's eyes who realize, you know, well, this guy's a pretty good guy. I assume that's what they saw. And so that's what I was doing. And, you know, those jobs were nice. I didn't stay in training for more than a couple years. I did teach for, 17 years for Chicago City Colleges. And I only was an EMS coordinator for about 4 years.
Hmm.
It became...
Just so people listening and watching understand, what's an EMS coordinator's job?
So an EMS coordinator in the city of Chicago, the state breaks up the different areas of the state by regions. The city of Chicago proper was Region 11. Like, I believe out here it's Region 7, Woodstock area. And so in Region 11, they had three resource hospitals that governed the medical aspect of EMS on the fire department and in the private service.
Okay.
One was the Illinois Masonic on the north side, and then there was Northwestern Memorial Hospital downtown, mm-hmm. and then there was University of Chicago on the south side. And these EMS coordinators taught continuing education, monitored the medical activity of all of the people within that region, okay? And if necessary, had to, unfortunately, sometimes discipline them if there was a problem.
Spankings.
Yeah, basically spankings. I like to think that re-education really helped before we had to get to the discipline part, but it depended on, of course, the seriousness of the incident.
Yeah.
It might have been beyond that. So that brought me to, it was 2008, and I was going to retire. All right. I was in a rank of what they call an ambulance commander on the Chicago Fire Department. And that was equal to captain, okay, and
on
job
the fire
duties
side.
On the fire side, and job duties and salary. I was ready to go. I thought, okay, you know, I'm 50. I get my pension. I got all my years in. I think I'm going to go.
Enough that you wouldn't be taking any...
I wouldn't take a loss. Yeah. I maxed out is what I did. And I thought, you know what? I think this is it. I'm going to go. It's really kind of early to leave at 50, but you know what? I already had 30 years in at that time. I thought, I'm just going to go. You know, discussed it with my wife. She was okay. You know, I mean, there's no more to make here, you know, so move on and maybe go work as a nurse. You know, I mean, 50 is pretty early to sit back and retire.
Sure.
So, but then all of a sudden they announced the chief's exam. Okay. And I had taken the chief's exam in the past. Didn't do very good. And I can't say it wasn't for lack of effort. It just worked out that way. I won't even get into the detail as to why. But I said, you know, they're offering the chief's exam again. And I don't know. You know, you think I should do it or not? You know, I mean, realize, this is directed at my wife, of course.
Sure, sure.
I'm saying, realize that if I do this, I've got a lot of studying to do. Okay, in preparation for this, to take this exam, okay? And if I'm going to put forth that effort, all right, and then when the list comes out, if I land really well on that list and get promoted, I've got to spend another 4 years in the chief's rank to get the full benefit of my pension.
Yeah.
I says, is that okay with you? You know? Because realize that we have to live in the city when we had that job.
Yeah.
And if I did that, I was going to be there 4 more years.
And you guys had plans to move out
absolutely.
Into the country.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So she said, I think you should go for it. I said, well, I think so too, because I think, number one, it'll benefit my income for the last 4 years I'm on that department. And then in my pension, it'll make a big difference. And I said, I know I can do this, you know. And she said, well, then go ahead. So it took 8 months, a year of preparation and studying. And then I took the test, and out of, I don't know how many took it, 80, 90, I don't exactly remember, I landed number 3.
Awesome.
And so I got promoted right away, and so the clock starts ticking again from when you get promoted. So I spent 4 years in the rank of chief, and then I'm getting ready to leave, and then they dangled the proverbial carrot, if you will, before us and said, well, if you stay till you're 55... which would have meant 1 more year. So I would have stayed 1 more to 5 years as a chief. We're going to offer you free health insurance for yourself and your wife and any children under 26 until I reach the age, until I reach Medicare age, is the way that contract was written. Which meant if I left at 55, I get free health insurance for 10 years
right?
till 65.
Awesome.
Absolutely. So I crunched some numbers real quick and I thought, wow. Considering this going up every year and everything, you know, health insurance, it's about $175,000 I don't have to take out of my pocket. I can stay 12 months for that. So I stayed 12 more months, and once I had my, I reached the age of 55, I retired on my 55th birthday.
Oh, cool.
November 29th, 2012, I retired. And that was my career on the Chicago Fire Department. So it all started back in a bar when my buddy said, hey, why don't you check out the fire department?
It's fun how sometimes things that become like a huge part of our life can have seemingly meaningless starting points. Or
correct.
That is that. Impetus.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And look at what happens. It just develops from there. So
yeah.
that was what I was doing. And then when I retired, I continued teaching for city colleges.
Mm-hmm.
In addition to that, I may add, as it's just occurring to me, and I believe we had talked about this before when you were in the class here, but I did a lot of work for attorneys.
Oh, yeah, expert witness stuff.
Right,
mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah, and talk about that for a minute.
Sure. So I got my exposure to that was on a call on the Chicago Fire Department, without getting into detail. A young lady had passed away because the facility, okay, didn't do what they were supposed to do, and then in addition to that, they had the ability to resuscitate and they weren't doing anything. So when the first arriving companies on the Chicago Fire Department arrived, they obviously noticed that there's nobody in there doing anything, no CPR, no nothing. Here's this young girl laying there, pulseless, non-breathing, dead. So The cavalry all comes in. We obviously worked very hard to attempt to resuscitate her, and it didn't work. Let's just say that. But the guys reported to me that nobody was doing anything when they got there. So I put that in my documentation because that has to justify.
Was this at some type of care facility?
It was an outpatient medical facility that provide MRIs.
Okay. So it wasn't like she was in a hospital. No. She was in a setting where at the very least those employees should have known. There was probably a nurse or a
doctor. Not should have. They were trained in CPR, and there was a crash cart there, for the doctor, who was on the premises, mm-hmm. to, take care of business, and nothing was done. Anyway, so thus, we bring her to the hospital. I explained to the doctor what was going on to justify why the lab values were going to be so screwed up. All right, because nobody was doing nothing for
Go back for a minute to the listeners, viewers, the lab values you're talking about now as they're doing an autopsy.
No, I'm talking about in the emergency department when they draw the laboratory, like blood.
Okay,
and all that stuff. They're going to see things like ABGs, which stand for arterial blood gas. They're going to see those are all out of whack, and they're going to want to know why. Well, the reason why is because she was sitting on a table with nobody doing CPR for 15, 20 minutes. Okay, that's why. All right, and that's why it's important to always include that in your narrative. Well, so anyway, she, as I said, met her demise. And I remember telling the family, the mother and father, who were in the grieving room at the emergency department, and after the doctor had already spoke to
them. Were you on that call, or did you show up because you were...
No, I was on that call.
Okay. As one of the first responders.
That's correct.
Okay.
And I, after the doctor had already gave them the bad news, they were obviously in the grieving room, grieving naturally. And I remember going in there and saying, I'm so sorry. You know, we worked so hard, and they were like, we saw you guys working so hard. You know, don't worry. You really tried, and blah, blah, blah. And all I said to them was, listen, if I were you, I would consider maybe legal action, And that's as far as I went. I walked out, and that was it. Well, a couple of years later, I get contacted by an attorney, through the fire department. And the fire department had to authorize me to talk to this attorney because this was business that was conducted on the Chicago Fire Department. So everything had to go through the fire department. So anyway, when I was allowed to talk to the lawyer, I talked to the lawyer. And basically, the bottom line is because of my documentation, of what was reported to us, that family won multi-million-dollar lawsuit. Not going to bring back their daughter.
Sure.
But it won them a multi-million-dollar lawsuit because of my documentation. Well, so, having said that, all of a sudden, this attorney now is contacting me to do cases for him, not related to the fire department, so there was no conflict of interest, as a medical legal expert witness, So I agreed, and I did work for him, and then he sent me to some of his colleagues, and other legal firms. And so before you know it, I was so discovered, if you will.
Sure.
And I'm working for attorney firms all across America.
Were they always instances of emergent care, or was it...
So some were in-hospital cases,
okay,
where I used my nursing knowledge more, and some were pre-hospital care cases where I used my experience as a paramedic. Okay, and I worked all across this country.
Did you
from
travel?
From the East Coast to the West Coast. I never traveled, The way this went down is once they would contact me and I would agree to take the case, we take care of the preliminaries, in terms of signing a contract between them, me and them. Exactly. And and then they obviously mail me out the, flash
files,
drive, zip drive. And then I would start reviewing depths,
Depositions,
excuse me, for people who were subpoenaed, and make my notes. And then I would write my opinion, whether they wanted to hear it or not. I mean, I had to give them the straight dope, because, of course, they're not going to want to go forward if this isn't a case that they don't think they're going to be able to win based on maybe what I have to say and others. So that's how it went down. I'd write my opinion. The other side would review it. They'd write their opinion. Anyway, back and forth. We had a chance to do rebuttal opinions, blah, blah, blah. But I never traveled anywhere or went to court because it was either the case was dropped or it was settled out of court.
I must say, people listen to that and they're like, shit, these kind of cases, people This is part of the reason healthcare costs so much, because you know, doctors have to pay out the nose for malpractice, and Charlie's underneath this.
Yeah, so. I'm sorry, Charlie.
No, she's fine. Sorry, she wants Charlie. To be biased. Wasn't People that, have to pay out the nose for the malpractice, and doctors are afraid to you know, actually get out there and do their job in a lot of cases because they're going to get sued. My point is, in like that scenario with that daughter that passed, while that's horrible and tragic and the money didn't bring them back, the argument, and this is me being devil's advocate, is that pain to the healthcare facility is now we got to do a better job because...
Well, and maybe, as you said, because of the money that the insurance company had to pay out for that facility that they were insured by, maybe their insurance rates went up.
Mm-hmm.
That maybe drives up the price of service, but I mean, that is the nature of the beast. I mean, when you're wrong, you're wrong. You know, they never seem to be wrong. That's my problem. All right. Oh, okay. You sued us for $4 million. All right. And you
when you say that, you're talking about
the family of this girl. Yeah. And I don't even know what that money was. I'm throwing that out.
Sure,
there.
Sure.
I know it was millions. And you sued us and you won successfully, and so our insurance had to pay that out, and now our rates are going up. But you know what? We don't lose in the end because we're just going to raise the price of our services to make that up. And that's unfortunate. So you're right. It does drive up the price of healthcare. I mean, we could talk about pharmaceuticals,
mm-hmm.
of course, legal pharmaceuticals, and that pharmacy reps are going to all these medical centers and these doctor's offices, all right, to get them to start writing scripts for their products, okay? But the way they do it is they come in and they provide these luxurious lunches and gifts for these people in the office.
Now that's all illegal, isn't it?
I don't even know. All I know is it used to exist.
I think it's all illegal.
And who do you think is ultimately paying for that? You and I, when we buy the drug.
Yeah.
All right. That's why the drug cost is so high, because someone's got to eat it.
Yeah.
You know, so same thing. Same thing. But anyway, so I got discovered. So I was doing a lot of that, and you know, I learned a lot, and I haven't worked in about a year and a half now, 2 years. Every now and then, out of the blue, I get contacted.
Somebody rings you up to help you win a case.
Yep.
So I've had him painting this big picture of his background, because after sitting with Steve for months in school, I thought, hey, this guy would be really great to share some stuff with you guys that are, I don't care if you're a cop, a fireman, first responder, or just an average citizen that's trying to learn different techniques to be prepared to deal with violence or calamity or medical issues. There's this strange notion now that, like, you have to train for everything. Mm-hmm. Like, I did a video yesterday which pissed a bunch of people off. I don't know if you're a gun guy or whatever, but... dudes will go out and they have, I call it fantasy training.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to be like, I'm not a fireman, but I want to go with the dive team and go spend an afternoon with them. Well, I'm not a diver. I don't even own diving gear. So as such, these skills are meaningless to me. So guys will go out and they have this fantasy training where they kit up like they're a commando. And it's fun, and there is something to be learned from it, but if you don't travel around with this gear and you're not in a position where you're ever going to need the gear, even like people like to comment on, like, what if there's a mass shooting? Well, probably you're not going to leave that mass shooting, go to your truck, grab this gear, and then re-engage, because now minutes have passed and the problem has solved itself some way, shape, or form.
Absolutely.
So, like, you know, we teach a TCCC course through our program with 18 Delta Green Beret medics, so like they're highly qualified, both from a educational background and then a practical background to teach it.
Absolutely.
But some of the stuff is still way beyond the scope of average people, even cops. So you taught some of the first TEMS officers in the city of Chicago, the tactical medicine guys. Talk about that for a minute, and then we'll kind of segue into the next topic.
Okay, so I believe it was the late 90s, maybe the early 2000s. Chicago Police Department contacted the city colleges and wanted to know if they can get some of their guys into our EMT and paramedic programs, because they're trying to start out with this SWAT, they called it, and they wanted these guys to be trained in the medical profession. So, of course, we didn't really change our program. They needed to apply, okay, but we did make room for them a few spots because it was important, all right, to the city of Chicago. And so we'd have two or three guys in a class of maybe 25, 30.
These are coppers that are coming.
These are right? Chicago policemen that are, and the SWAT wasn't up and running necessarily yet. They were just, it was all in the early infancy of working, and at least to my knowledge. And so they got trained and became paramedics. And by the time that all happened, the SWAT was up and running. And they actually had all the equipment they needed and their policies and procedures in place for response, for SWAT responses. And then there were other policies written that also incorporated the Chicago Fire Department that would also respond on these SWAT responses. And people would ask, well, why the Chicago Fire Department, if it's a police matter? Well, because the police are going to shoot people, all right? People are going to maybe shoot at the police, and people can get hurt. So EMS for the fire department needed to be there. Of course, they weren't in the middle of the firing here. They were off in a staging area, nice and safe, monitoring a frequency, okay, and, of course, talking on cell phones with the commander on the scene for Chicago police. And and we eventually thought, well, you know what, we better get a fire engine in there because they do shoot these things. I believe they're referred to as flashbangs in through these windows, and then they go boom and they deafen these people and they come staggering out. And but the problem with that is when it's going through a window and it bangs, it can light things on fire when it does that. And that happened. Okay? Yeah. And so we need a fire engine there in case. So a fire engine and an ambulance would usually stand by. They'd also send a EMS chief, okay, to stand by on those two. And so that's how that whole program developed. And I suppose it's in big-time working order now.
Yeah.
You know, I was there through the infancy. And so.
Did you ever run into a guy named Paul Whiffler, Dr. Paul Whiffler? He worked for the state police's SWAT team. He started a, he's got, still got a company that does training like that. And this is going back to the 90s like that.
I don't recall the name.
ER doc. But
oh, ER doc.
Yeah, he's an ER doctor, and that's...
You know where he was an ER doc?
He's still an ER doc out in Peoria and that system out that
way.
Okay,
I see. Yeah.
Yeah. But kind of like, he wrote the textbook. TACMED Essentials was the name of the textbook.
Oh, very interesting, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I'm sure if you started looking him up, you probably... maybe even attended a training of his or something.
I may have, but yeah. I just don't recall. So my whole thing is now I'm, 62 years old, and I'm winding down. And when I moved from Chicago out to Marengo, for my first couple of years I was commuting, believe it or not, back and forth to the city colleges. And it became very cumbersome and overwhelming, if you will.
70 miles.
It was, 63 miles one way, and... And the miles were accumulating on my new vehicle, more rapid than I wanted to. And so I said, you know what, I got to look into their program out here. So I started touching base with a few people, and they said, oh, you know, you have to talk to this lady out at this place. And,
you don't need to say her name.
No, I'm not. I called and went in for an interview, told her what I was looking for, and she said, you know, I'm interested in you. And I said, that's great. And so I went in for an interview, presented my resume, and I was hired. And so then I started working for McHenry County College and doing the same things, teaching EMR and EMT and paramedic for this college out here. And, of course, then resigned my position in the city. And this is much more convenient.
Yeah.
Than that. So,
way back.
Yeah, so that's basically what I do. I like to keep busy. Just a side note, and I don't even know if you know this, because this was just new, that I started doing in December after you finish your class. I work for McHenry County Senior Services, okay, in my spare time, because I get a little bored sitting at home, and I like to give back.
What are you doing?
So I do senior transportation, all right? So seniors will call the McHenry County Senior Services looking for someone to take them to a doctor appointment and bring them back, take them to the grocery store, bring them back, things that they can't do and they really need help with. So I do that, and I also am a senior companion for the same McHenry County Senior Services.
Very cool.
And that is just go visit seniors, hang out for 2-3 hours, have lunch.
That's cool, man.
Talk. And yeah, so I do that now in my spare time from working for McHenry County College. That keeps my week pretty busy.
I got a buddy that left Chicago police and went to a little town, and he always tells his story. He says, from Mayhem to Mayberry.
Well, that's basically it. I mean, you're going to a small town. It took some adjustments.
Yeah.
It definitely did. Being a Chicago boy, born and raised, working my entire life in the city, you know, when I retired, moving out, I mean, I'm on an acre, and I think that's huge, you know, compared to my little postage stamp size lot in the city. So, and we're happy. We're happy. It's nice out here, you know, and, you know, this is where we planned on retiring. It wasn't Marengo. We weren't set on Marengo, but we wound up finding a house that we wanted in Marengo, and that's where we landed, yeah.
So we took 45 minutes for me to be able to tell the listener viewers that what you had to pass on is valuable.
Absolutely.
I mean, I could have just predicated the whole thing on this is Steve. Steve knows what he's talking about, and so whatever he says, listen to. But I think it helps if people have an understanding of that's a pretty broad background. Fire service, expert witness, nursing, and a broad scope. You know, I was talking about the clinical, you talking about how there's some, of course, differences between the nursing and the paramedic profession, but like what I first thought of is just all that exposure to sick and hurt people, you know, and then knowing what the outcome is or potential outcome, like you start to really, that's just a lot of data in the computer.
It is. You have to want to enjoy helping people, and as you can see that I'm helping people with McHenry County Senior Services right now for free. You know, and that's how I am.
So, Mr. Smith, you're getting a little older. Who's going to inherit the property? Old Steve's the only guy here. I'm just kidding,
but,
of course.
Well, and the thing that I'd like to, your audience, you know, out there, I'd like to tell them, and I'd like to share this with all our young students that are just starting to develop at the college, okay, that if you work hard, okay, and you set your goals, it'll pay off in the future. I'm all about building my resume. Okay, It's been built now. It's not going to be built anymore. I'm kind of over that. But I built my resume, and that's why people ask me to do certain things and take leadership roles and do certain things. That's why attorneys hire me. It's not based on who I am. It's or who Steve himself. It's about my resume. It's about the experiences I've had and the achievements and the accomplishments. And everybody can do it. If you start out young enough, by the time you're 35 or 40, you'll have a nice following to follow you into retirement, you know, and then even though you retire, you're still in demand for certain things, and you can still make an income if you choose.
You probably didn't see all that at that time.
I did not.
Yeah,
I did
that's
not.
The interesting thing.
I did not. Mm-hmm. I fell into some things, you know, I mean, who knew I was going to, you know, get on the fire department? I mean, passing nursing school was just unbelievable achievement for me. Getting promoted in all those ranks on the fire department was just unbelievable. I never thought that that would happen to me. I never thought that at the end of my career, okay, I'd have such a resume built up that, you know, I'm still in demand. You know, and that wasn't my intention when I was doing this, but it turned out that way.
It wouldn't have happened if you didn't do a good job, didn't show up on time, didn't produce.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, you're being
humble
about it, but you don't, you know, the guy that is the slugger on the baseball team, well, knows it,
yeah,
because the stats are up on the scoreboard,
right.
So
that
is a good thing. You know, we talked about that with some of the youngsters, and you know, I'm like the old guy in that course, which is, you know, whatever, not the point. But some of those kids are my daughter's now in your class.
Yes.
And so I'm old enough to be the father of some of those people. And you look and you wanted to say, like, man, think about what you're doing. And as that age, I was a jackass. Mm-hmm. So I can completely.
Well, with age, as you know, comes maturity.
Yeah, for sure.
And they're young. You know, they're just
out of high school. I'm not knocking on
it. No, and I'm not either. But I get it.
It's hard to understand the whole totality.
Yeah. And you're an older guy thrown in that mix, and that's harder to deal with, too. So kudos to you for even being able to survive those young guys.
That's
but
fun.
Like me, when I went to nursing school, all right? I went to nursing school, I was, I think, in my mid-30s. And these were kids 20 years old that I'm in class with, okay? And, you know, I mean, I had a family, I'm married, had a family, you know, full-time job, you know, didn't really gel with them because they just were kids, you know, and got along with them, you know, but that's it. I guess the old saying, it's never too late to go back to school and learn.
Well, I enjoyed the hell out of it. So for the record, I enjoyed the, you know, the heck out of that, being with the young kids. And,
yeah.
You know, it's, you and I talked about this before. For some of them, I mean, we saw boys crying because they've, you know, failed or didn't pass certain things. At that age, you, some to me or you or somebody else, I'll try again tomorrow.
Right,
or
right.
And then you look at yourself, like you said, you didn't do well the first EMT course. Nobody's fault but your own. You know, even if we had a bad instructor, you could have read the book. You could have done the stuff. So some of those guys need to learn those lessons, and at the end of the day, if you don't have the ability to grind it out, maybe you shouldn't be in the job where life and death are on the
line.
Well,
and you know what? This is just, if you're planning on going in to EMS in the fire service, then you better be able to cut the mustard now, okay?
Yeah.
Because it's just going to be the same old thing in the fire service. You can't be silly and immature and irresponsible when you're in the fire service. Those guys are not going to tolerate that.
Yeah.
Okay, because they depend on you for their life sometimes when it comes down to it, you know. So these guys are learning valuable lessons now. Once they get through this, they're going to maybe go through the fire academy and, you know, men and women, and that's if that's the direction they want to go. And they're going to learn more, okay. It's kind of like a semi-military organization, all right. They're going to learn more of what this is about and mm-hmm. how to prepare to be in the fire service. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the setup we're trying to, you know, get through to them now. And some are making it and some don't make it.
That's, as the judge said, the world needs ditch diggers too, you know.
That's right.
Caddyshack.
And if that's what they want to do is dig ditches.
Yeah,
I can tell you I didn't want to wash dishes anymore in a dish room.
Sure.
You know, I had enough of that. And I said, that was an eye-opener. And I thought, you know what? I got to figure something
I'm
out.
I'm done with that.
Yeah.
So we talked briefly upstairs, and I don't want to go, like, deep into the technical jargon because there's no use for it. But, you know, for example, I know guys that carry 4 tourniquets, you know, to the mall. Could they use those? Sure. And is there a reason to have them? Sure. But, like, I'll ask those guys, like, do you know CPR? Or, like, have you paid attention to where the exits are in the building? And, you know, shit like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what did you see? Of course, depending on where you're at, if you were in certain areas of a city, or if you're a guy out here on a fire service is going to see farm accidents that you would have never seen because there's no farming where you were. But what were you being called out on? What was stuff that if a average individual had some skills, they could have saved life or helped a patient, family member, you know, stuff like that?
Well, coming from the big city, and any big city's typically like this, there's high fire volume calls and high EMS volume calls. The very basic is having CPR as knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's the first thing.
How often do you think a person should, you know, the certs last a couple of years. How often do you think somebody should actually continue that training? Monthly, quarterly?
You mean once they're trained?
Yeah.
In terms of training, I think they should review, okay, what they learned every month.
Every month?
Yeah. That's something to help them out, because let's face it, a year and a half later, you're still licensed or you still have your certification in CPR, but does that remember what exactly you're supposed to do in a certain situation
mm-hmm.
if you weren't reviewing it?
Mm-hmm.
Now, guys that are working in that field all the time and are doing it all the time, that's a different story.
Yeah.
You know, but...
Yeah, and we're talking about not nurses, not first responders.
Right, you're talking about civilian personnel
that
are not involved generally. And so in the city, you know, I mean, we saw very high volume of trauma.
Trauma.
You know, trauma.
So what's... you guys show up after the fact. So while you are, while police and fire are the first responders, oftentimes some civilians, some which police and fire are civilians. I like to remind people of that. Somebody usually called 911. Somebody saw it. Somebody, did that piss you off?
No, not at all.
Civilian?
No, no.
But somebody,
I am a civilian now. I'm retired.
Somebody saw it. Somebody, you know, was there to witness it. And sometimes people try to apply aid, and sometimes they don't.
So, I mean, I believe your question was initially, and maybe what you're leading to again, besides CPR, having some kind of a first aid training, okay? The Red Cross used to, and I believe they still do, offer advanced first aid training. And that trains you on how to splint certain type of broken bones, how to control bleeding, things that could be, you know, potentially life-threatening things. For the average civilian out there, that would behoove them not to only be CPR certified, but they have some kind of first aid training.
Okay. Cardiac issues. I had a friend call me the other day. His mother collapsed in the kitchen. You know, him and his wife are both pretty sharp people. Mm-hmm. His father's a retired OB. So mm-hmm. I'm like, well, what'd your dad do? You know, your dad was there. They're like old Europeans, you know, like, she's okay now. But it seems like this is so prevalent now. It's such easy things for people to recognize symptoms of. Mm-hmm. And so I'm kind of just like leading you along here. Mm-hmm. You know, like, where is a good spot for somebody to start?
In regard to?
To developing some of these skill sets, developing some of this.
So, yeah. CPR is number one.
CPR number one.
Okay. Number two, taking a first aid course. Okay, and then from there,
let's go into the first aid course for a minute. What would you, if Steve compiled like a basic first aid course, is this a 2-hour thing, a 12-hour thing, a 20-hour thing? Like, how much does a person, because you can just keep going, right? You can go deeper and deeper and deeper.
Well, first of all, it's a structured course, okay? And I'm not certain any longer, because it's been years now, if the American Red Cross offers it or the American Heart Association, who offers it, I don't know. But it's not that structured. I believe it might be 1 or 2 hours a week.
Okay.
Okay, for 6 or 8 weeks, and then you get your certification in that. That's the way it used to be. I used to back in the day, and I neglected to say that until we just started talking about it, because I forgot. I used to teach advanced first aid for the Red Cross.
Okay.
In the city back in the day. And my qualifications were, I was a paramedic, just a paramedic. I shouldn't say just, but just, I wasn't a nurse yet. And I would teach those courses. So if somebody wanted to get started, and because they're not sure if this is the field they want to be in, CPR is number one, okay? And then maybe taking a first aid course, because your level of commitment's not that big yet, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to tell you, oh, you know what, this is something I want to do. I'm enjoying this. I'm very interested in this. This is cool, whatever, all right? And then you would step up, as you know, into maybe EMR, emergency medical responder courses, okay? And that gives you a little bit more knowledge than first aid, and then you move on from there. Then it's the EMT training, then it's paramedic training. You can go to nursing school. I mean, there's lots of springboards you can go off of once you get up into the higher level of medical courses. So that's what I recommend.
So I guess this is what I'm digging at. Right now we have this, it's a phenomenon. It's like this explosion of people seeking training. And oftentimes you want to go to like the highest and best, right? I don't want to be a nurse. I want to be a doctor. I don't want to be the guy on the movie set. I want to be the director. So a lot of folks don't dig in at all because I can't be a doctor. I can't be a paramedic or a nurse. What really is feasible? Is it feasible for an average person to be expected to deal with somebody choking, to understand the signs and symptoms of a stroke or a cardiac issue, deal with traumatic blood loss? Like, is that inside the scope of average Joe?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that is feasible. If for no other reason, that training is going to be invaluable, okay, to your family and loved ones, if they need that. Some people just take it for that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you travel around with any gear on you in your vehicle?
I don't any longer. I got to say that when I first became an EMT and a paramedic, as every other good newbie, per se, would do, of course, I had my box of tricks, you know, to care for people. And as the years went on, that wore away, and I didn't carry anything besides maybe a pocket mask to do some kind of rescue breathing or ventilations for someone who might need mm-hmm. that or CPR. I've been called in, you know, off duty, okay, on lots of occasions on situations where I had to, I didn't have to, but I did choose to act and do CPR on people.
You were just a bystander out in
public.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Tell us one of those stories.
So we're at a Swedish picnic out in Elgin, Illinois. And it was my in-laws. They were members of this Swedish organization. They had their annual summer picnic out there. And all of a sudden over the intercom comes a, it was an outdoor thing, and over the intercom comes, we need help at booth 8 or whatever, wherever the location was. Woman collapsed, blah, blah, blah. And so I wasn't going to engage. I thought, okay, there's lots of people here. There's got to be other medically trained professionals, you know. And my father-in-law says to me, aren't you going to go help? I said, well, Dad, there's, I'm sure people are, I mean, booth 8 is all the way over there. I'm sure people are already, come on, let's go. You need the help. Okay. So we went over, and of course we get there, and no one's there yet helping. And it's an elderly lady, very elderly. I put her in her mid to late 80s, even possibly early 90s, in cardiac arrest. Collapsing was in cardiac arrest. So I began CPR, and within a minute or two, someone else showed up, and they assisted me. And then, of course, as you know, 911, I'm sure, was called, and they arrived and took the patient. So there's a prime example of, because I was CPR certified and had that knowledge, I was able to help someone out. Whether she made it or not, I don't know. We never will know.
Sure.
I mean, she was whisked away.
But you tried.
But I tried.
That's a perfect point we bring up in our combatives classes. It's human nature. Everybody always thinks somebody else will do it. Not that you did the wrong thing,
right.
But and you're man enough to admit.
Right.
You
did it.
Yeah,
how it came down.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm sure if that was 22-year-old you, you probably would have sprinted across the place, but you'd done it long enough, you become kind of numb to that that adrenalized event.
I do.
But if not us, who? Is usually who? Friend of mine.
Don't assume that someone else is going
to. Marengo Fire. There was a baseball game out here at the park last summer, and some guy went down, and he was like already leaving, and somebody came and grabbed him, and you know, Bob was having a heart attack, and he had to send somebody into the school, break into the school to get the AED off the wall, and they saved the guy. But like, if it was 10 seconds and he had gotten in his truck and left, that guy probably would have been gone.
He may have, yes.
Yeah.
Unless somebody else was knowledgeable.
There wasn't.
CPR, that's what you learn in CPR, is how to use an AED.
Yeah.
So being CPR certified, which is the very basic first move, look what you can do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
I dig it. There are tons of programs like that are available. I think it's, you just said, it's all inside somebody's scope of ability. I think people just need to understand that this stuff happens so freaking often. Mm-hmm. And of course, whenever it happens and then there's nobody there to do anything, you hear people say, I didn't know what to do, I was helpless, and my kid found him in the pool or whatever, mm-hmm. what it is. I didn't know what to do. Mm-hmm. Well, why didn't you know what to do?
You know what really helps? What really helps is television. Okay? That helps people understand that maybe this is something I want to do. Like these shows like Chicago Fire, Chicago PD, Chicago Med, okay? The old ER and all these television shows that show in-hospital type stuff and what the roles of doctors and nurses are. You know, outside the hospital, what the role of the Chicago police and fire do. And this makes them understand some of what's really going on, even though it's television, okay, that really happens,
mm-hmm.
okay? And what's that new show? What's that show? It's not so new, but their actual, was it Live PD?
Oh, yeah, I've never seen it, but yeah.
But those are real calls. Of course, the names are being, but those are, that's really happening,
mm-hmm.
you know? And they have a police officer, they have a Chicago, or they have a fire guy, and I don't know who else, maybe an EMS guy, I don't know what it is, but they're all on there, and they're basically narrating what's going on, you know, when they're showing it. It's pretty cool, and this is real stuff. like cops. Mm-hmm. You know, that was real stuff.
Bad boys.
Yeah, bad boys.
Was there something that you saw a lot or enough of that you and your coworkers would just say, like, God, this, like, people, you know what I mean?
Well,
I'm sure drunk driving and stupid shit like that, but, you know, was there something that just seemed to stick out like this?
You mean in terms of the nature of the call?
Oh, yeah, and stuff that maybe could have been affected by people knowing.
Well, so teenage drinking.
Okay.
You know, that's Friday and Saturday nights in the city was just crazy around any of the colleges or universities because these kids didn't know how to drink or just learning how to drink alcohol. And they drink and they pass out and they throw up and 911 was called. Maybe they attempt to drive a motorized vehicle, mm-hmm. and there's even further complicates things. So that kind of stuff we saw a lot of. And then there were your older individuals that maybe homeless or just bad type of situations or whatever, drinking and passing out on the streets and stuff.
Alcohol-related stuff.
Yeah, alcohol-related stuff, yeah.
No bueno.
Yeah, no bueno.
But nothing else seemed to...
No, you and then you had your... you know, overdoses, okay? When bad dope comes out onto the streets, okay, all of a sudden we know it, okay? Because within the course of a week, everybody's overdosing, okay? I'm not a pharmacist, and I don't understand why. I don't know if it's because the product is too pure or what, or they think they have to do more of their product to get the effect they want to get, but they wind up overdosing. And all of a sudden, in a week or two, everybody's overdosing, okay? And so you'll see that a lot. You'll see people who do it on purpose because they're possibly suicidal, okay? And then you have your recreational drug user who does it, okay? And that became pretty, prevalent, if you will, in the last 10 to 15 years, you know. There were a lot of people getting interested in recreational type of drugs.
Yeah.
Okay, and we'd see all kinds of situations occur because of that.
You just brought something up off topic, but on the same thread, the fire service has a huge suicide rate among its...
As well as the Chicago police, yes.
Yeah, yeah. Just in general across the United States.
Yes, well, you know, when you're dealing with... you know, tragic situations for your entire life, and you see the worst of the worst. You know, I don't know if you can even imagine this, but getting my big thing was, and it always affected me, but children,
sure,
all right, that meet their demise in terms of dying or have such tragic situations occur, just really affected me because I have children, okay? And before I had children, it was a sad thing too, but it didn't affect me as much. All right. And then, you know, you see all this other stuff on the holidays. Christmas Day, families gathered around the table, eating a Christmas meal, and someone, boom, drops over. That's it. 911 gets called. We're doing CPR there right on Christmas Day. Person dies. You know, tragic. It's always tragic, but then it's compounded on holidays. So we take that home.
Yeah.
We take that home. We internalize that. We say we're not going to, but we do. Whether we think we do, whether we think we're not internalizing it or not, we really are.
Okay? So what are some things that people, not just in the fire service, but any, I'm sure that was, by the time you made it to chief, I'm sure you had much training in helping your guys and gals deal with such things.
Right.
And what are some, of course, you know, alcohol and things like that are a temporary fix, but that's not a real fix.
Well, and that's not the healthy fix
either. Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean... What we would do off duty, I mean, a lot of men and women, Chicago Police, Chicago Fire, they indulge in alcohol, okay? It helps them. Okay, is it healthy? Not necessarily. But now in the last 10 to 15 years, we've had other avenues in which they could seek out, okay, for help. There's people to talk to on these departments. We offer these services to talk to them to help them. Okay, and so if they don't seek it out, but we also see that it's negatively affecting their job, then we're going to seek it out for them. They're going to go mandatorily, okay, because we can't, obviously, you know, when you report to duty as a police officer on the fire department, you've got to be all in.
Yeah.
Your mind can't be out here, you know, you can't be an emotional wreck. all of these things. So we got to make you better. And that is, it's almost like the military. What do they call it when you come out of traumatic situations?
And PTSD.
Yeah, exactly. PTSD. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you have these situations. It's the same thing.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, it's the same thing.
It's not natural for a person to spend, we do it, but to spend their whole life where every day is just the worst things.
Right.
It's not.
We see people at their worst times.
Yeah.
You know, they're not calling us out to have tea. You know, they're calling us out because they're ill or injured, or one of their family members are, or there's a civilian on the street, you know, that needs some assistance. We're called out to help.
Would you trade any of it?
I would not.
Yeah.
I would not. I'm thankful and fortunate for lots of things in my life, and that is one of them. You know, getting out of the fire department, surviving all those years. Did it affect me? Of course it affected me. Did I come home sometimes real sad and angry? Of course I did. You know, but you know what? Did I necessarily have an avenue back in those days to talk to anybody? No. You know, but I just stayed busy, and mm-hmm. I talked to my family, and I talked to other people in the department. And, you know, you realize that this is the field or the career in which you chose to go into. No surprises. You know what's going to be in there. You don't need to go in and then find out, oh, my God, I didn't know it was going to be like this.
Mm-hmm.
You knew you're a 911 person. You're going to be a first responder.
And you did it.
And I did it. And I survived.
I appreciate it.
Yeah,
thank you. I ask folks when we're wrapping these things up, if the people watching, listening to you that joined the podcast today, never meet you, never see you again, never hear your name again, what would you leave them with?
Well, in terms of what I would leave them with is, I think you should never stop learning, all right? The younger you are, you should realize what your goals are, okay, and start trying to accomplish them and achieve them.
Any tips or tricks to sidetrack you? You know, realizing what goals are, sometimes you don't have a goal. Any tips or tricks to, like, you went in that bar that day and the course of your life kind of, I don't want to say fell in your lap, but you weren't looking for it.
It did change, yes.
So, like, that goal wasn't there. Like, any tips or tricks to get some goals?
Sure. I would just start putting my feelers out, okay, and start talking to people in different areas that you think you're interested in, regardless whatever that is. It could be photography. It could be social worker, it could be whatever you want, you know, mm-hmm. medical field, fire service, things that interest you. I think you should start talking to people and stop by your local police department or fire department. Talk to those guys and gals, mm-hmm. you know, and say, hey, so I'm thinking about this. What do you think? But, you know, start talking to some other people that you can talk to.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe look in a university or a college catalog and look at all the different majors and minors that they're offering and different things, and they describe what these are about, and read up on it a little bit and see if that be something that would interest you. Whatever you do, okay, make sure that it's what you want to do and not what you have to do. Okay, I told my three children, okay, it's when you go to work, it's a job, all right? 95% of the people, and don't quote me on the percentage, but I believe like 95% of the people that go to work,
he said 95,
don't like their job.
Yeah.
Okay. Don't like their job. But that's why it's called a job.
Yeah.
Okay. And so my other advice to my children was, look, if you're going to pursue something that when you get out, you're going to be able to go right to work, all right, and make some decent money to make a living, to make an honest living. Don't go to school, and I'm not going to even mention for what, and get these undergraduate degrees, okay? That's a great achievement. Don't get me wrong. All right. But you can't go anywhere with them.
Right.
You need a master's degree or better to just be able to start making some money. And if that's what you want to do, just realize that ahead of time, okay? And don't be crying about it when you get to that point.
Yeah.
Otherwise, like nursing, for example, you go to school and get an undergraduate degree in nursing, that's all you need. You never have to go to graduate school and get a master's. You can then start working and making a very nice living.
Yeah.
I just asked someone the other day, what is a new grad nurse starting out at in terms of an hourly rate of pay? And they said about $29 or $30 an hour, which I think is pretty healthy.
Yeah. I got a niece in school doing that now.
Yeah. So I guess that would be my advice.
I dig it. I hope you guys enjoyed having the conversation. We learned all about Steve. I think we hit on some cool topics. My takeaway listening to you, I got this like thought that developed in my head years ago that shit begets more shit and success begets more success. You know?
I agree.
Like, and so we all know somebody that like every time you talk to them, like, the freaking washing machine broke and my hip's out and I got the freaking bills piling up, and it's like, God, I don't want to talk to
you.
And then somebody else, like, the kids are doing good, and I got a raise at work, and wife and I are going to Barbados.
It's the experiences you choose in life, you know, and it's the avenue in which you choose that's going to make you successful or not, you know. And some people, like you said, are just never pleased, you know. I mean, you can't change them. They're going to be that way, and that's the way it is. I'm happy, I'm fortunate, and I'm good.
I'm happy, too. I'm happy you came. Hey, do me a favor. Everybody that comes in here signs that back there. Sign your name somewhere, anywhere on there.
I'm going to show you how I sign my...
Is it going to be something weird?
No, not at all.
Anywhere you want. And then write today's date of 2/26.
That okay?
I'm just watching. Okay. Go ahead. I've been waiting. We had that up there for over a year, and nobody's chose the exact center. Except my sister went below you. So I want to see who felt important enough to put themselves right in the bullseye. And it was Steve Zambello.
And today's day is 26.
2/26, man. Yeah. See a lot of gunshots? Gunshot wounds?
Say it again.
Did you see a lot of gunshot wounds?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. City of Chicago, that was... Even back in the day before, I've been retired over 7 years, there were a lot of gunshot stuff, but as you can see on local news now, that's just the nature of the beast every day in the city of Chicago.
I didn't know, like, if you personally, if it was something that you guys were...
No, anytime you're a first responder in the city of Chicago, you're going to see gunshot wounds, you're going to see stabbings, you're going to see lots of bad stuff,
Horrible. Well, I appreciate it, man.
Thank you.
It was a good conversation. Yes, we could go on and on and on. You guys listening, if you enjoyed this, share it. If you're looking to do a job in the field that Steve was in, you know, there was some good information for you. And you don't have somebody doesn't have to go through all the hoops you did. They could just go get a fire science degree and paramedic under their belt and go to work.
And then maybe later on they might want to, you know, step up and do a little bit more. It's all about just continuing to learn.
I like that.
Yeah.
Got to always be learning. I've been trying to read like a book a week.
Never stop learning.
I dig it.
Even now, I'm retired and I still learn every day.
Keeps your brain working.
Oh, yeah. Important these days.
I agree. Hey, we appreciate you guys. And put a thanks in the comments for Drew, who's been working the cameras back there. He's working hard and trying to stay quiet. He's got on slippers today. Because it's been snowing salty, and I chastised him for bringing boots in the house that are literally... I got to send a picture of him so Drew can put them in. Let me get a picture from here. He's got on freaking bunny slippers. No joke. No joke bunny slippers. I'm going to get a picture from my point of view.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Perfect. You're pointing at him. So anyway, appreciate it. MickeyWithCarryTrainer.com. Today, Steve Zambello. Higher Line Podcast. Be well, guys. Don't be dickheads.
Visit our website, CarryTrainer.com, for information about classes held throughout the U.S., Carry Trainer apparel, and upcoming projects. You can also email us at training@CarryTrainer.com for information about setting up your own private course or speaking engagement. training@CarryTrainer.com or CarryTrainer.com.